In the Movie Podcast. Welcome to In The Move For Podcast with Callum Reid of UltimateAddict.com and Pete Shepherd of InTheMoveForBlog.blog.co.uk. It's episode 30. Merry Christmas.
Indeed. It's a good job we've had that new music at the beginning for the last few weeks, otherwise we'd have had a large selection of festive songs to choose from.
That's true. And people have heard enough Wizard and Slayer by now, right?
Yes. Mariah Carey can sod off too.
We love you, Mariah. Was it a good one then, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I didn't get Nick and Nora's though.
No.
And the thing is, what I do is, because it's impossible to buy me DVDs if you're somebody else. So I give a list, but I give a list that's way too big. And it's just so if somebody wants to buy me something, then they can have a look at the list and then maybe choose something. So there's a little bit of choice in there. But I didn't actually stress how much I wanted Nick and Norris. So yesterday I bought the book and the DVD online.
Was it like £3 or something?
Yeah, something like that, yeah, each. But I can't get the soundtrack for under a tenner, it's annoying. Oh, dear. Yeah, sporting news very quickly. Hideki Matsui retired yesterday.
Oh, did he?
10 years in the Japanese Baseball League and 10 years in the Major League Baseball.
Was he at the Yankees when he retired, or
no?
Had he left?
The Rays had cut him in October, on August. Sorry, so he'd been playing for the Rays this year, but he was only batting like 154 or something awful. So
yeah,
you know it's done. You know it's over when you're only batting 154. But yeah, former World Series MVP. He was brilliant when they won the World Series in 2009. Just ultra clutch.
Totally. Mm. Okay. So,
because there's going to be more baseball as well in this podcast with the films.
Is there?
Yes. You'll see.
Okay. Right. Something to look forward to.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to start by talking about Foreign Language Oscar, which we never do.
No, ever. We hate talking about that.
Yeah, the shortlist was announced. They do a shortlist of films like 3 or 4 weeks before the actual nominations. I'm not sure why. Any ideas?
Well, they do the shortlist in order so that it all stems back to trying to not have the same boring type of films every year. So in 2006, they instituted this shortlist that the New York and LA panel of about 30 voters would then vote from.
Yeah,
and of course that worked so well because the first year Volver didn't get nominated, so there were problems right off the bat. So they've tinkered with it since,
and they now do a shortlist of 9.
Yeah, of which 3 have been inserted on
by a committee.
Yes.
And so here's the 9, and then we'll try and piece together what might have happened.
Yeah.
The 9 are Amor from Austria, Beyond the Hills from Romania, The Untouchables from France, Kon-Tiki from Norway, Nove from Chile, A Royal Affair from Denmark, Sister from Switzerland, Warwitch from Canada, and The Deep from Iceland. Mm. So, well, do you want to start with The Deep?
Balthasar Kormákur, he did Contraband earlier this year with Mark Wahlberg, Icelandic director who did a film about 5 years ago called Jar City, which was quite a good like crime thriller. It's sort of like predated the now obsession with Scandinavian crime. It wasn't a great film, but it was interesting, and there was immediate talks for a remake, which still hasn't happened. But obviously, he's a bit of an actor as well. He's acted in some films that the film he did, Contraband, was a remake of Reykjavik Rotterdam, which was submitted a few years ago, and he was the star of. So it's all a bit weird. So I'm surprised he's made it on, because his sort of films don't usually. So I guess that was added on because he's now kind of a name in Hollywood-ish.
Really? I mean, it's quite an uplifting story. Hmm. It's a true story.
Hmm. Well, we're going to assume that the Romanian Beyond the Hills is definitely an add-on.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Along with Amor, I would say.
I would guess Amor was added on as well. And then of the
maybe
rest...
Maybe No?
Yes. Well, No. No's quite big subject matter, which they tend to really respond to in this category.
Yeah.
And it's got a familiar face in Gail Garcia Bernal. So that's the final one is a bit of a maybe. I could see Barbara really appealing to them, but also I could see that having the name that it would get added on as well. But maybe Sister got added on because that's... but then again, that's the sort of dynamic, the sort of like emotional relationship that I think they might like. But equally, it's a big enough name one, and it's a out there enough pick that could have been added to.
They seem to quite like domestic kind of stories. So Sister, I think Sister genuinely made it.
Yeah, I think it could have done. This is the thing. Do you think A Royal Affair got added on?
No.
Do you think Warwich got added on?
No.
I think Warwich might have snuck in as well. Yeah, I think probably a more...
Beyond the Hills, for sure.
Those are the two, and then either Sister or not.
The Deep.
Yeah, probably The Deep, but you never know. But yeah, so the big omissions.
Barbara.
Is the huge omission. They said there's no big omissions this year because Amour and Indushabla got on, and that's the only two films people have heard about. Barbara is a stunning miss.
Yeah, it's a great film.
And it's got great... It's got great reception and it's got great distribution, and so you can't have this system to add films, correct the list in inverted commas, and add films of reputation and not put Barbara on. But then
I imagine that was a near miss.
Yeah, but then they do this every year. They did it with Gomorrah, which nobody online likes, and it got a really perfect, impeccable critical reception. But I'm saying there's no way you can not have that on if you're adding three films of reputation.
Yeah.
And this just highlights how ridiculous the system is, because you still have films that miss, and it is ridiculous that they miss.
But that's why I think that something like No was added on, because...
Right. Yeah.
Because if they could have chosen Barbara, they would have done, but they picked the three auteurs.
I see what you mean, they're not picking Cormacore over Barbara, is your point. Yeah.
That's what, yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, that and Fill the Void didn't get on.
Yeah, Fill the Void, another... I'd actually had a little bet on that, because it was 66-1.
Yeah, but to win the whole thing.
Yeah. But, because the thing is, if it got on, then it was much better than 66-1. But,
Lassie Hallström's film didn't get on either.
No,
which doesn't look very good, but
China got shut out completely. Chen Kaiga film.
Yeah,
and there's no other really, really big ones that you see anything. I've seen 80 million. I remember saying I wouldn't be surprised if they missed it, if they didn't go for it.
Yeah.
Even though it is their kind of thing.
They did pick most of the big ones. Barbara's the only real kind of shocker.
Yeah, Caesar Must Die also has a big rep.
Oh, that's true. Caesar Must Die, yeah.
Which we talked about last week. Talked about. Yeah, so what are your thoughts? I mean, Amour you quite like but not majorly in love with.
Yeah, really happy Sister got on there.
Yes, so thrilled. Am I. So am I, because that actually made my scene of the year.
Yeah.
On my Blogiversary Awards.
As a nominee, you mean?
Oh, like did the, I? It just missed. Oh, yeah, it was my runner-up. It just missed out to to Cotillard, but it was serious consideration. It's the best acted scene of the year for me.
Yeah.
Certainly.
It's great.
But yeah,
Not happy about Beyond the Hills because I didn't like it, but
glad Warwich got on, and I think it's I think it will get nominated now, because of. But then again, well, what do I think is getting nominated? I think Amor's getting nominated, and then Too Sharp. But yeah, they're not gonna miss it at this point.
Are we thinking that they have to see them all now?
They do have to see them all. They have to see them all, and I think that Warwich will get on because it's New York, and I think everyone will assume A Royal Affair will get in because they've heard of it.
But it won't.
But I don't think it actually will. I think it's a kind of toss up between Sister and Beyond the Hills for the final spot. I think No will get in as well, because of the subject matter, and so I think Amor and Shabla definitely
Warwich,
no, yeah, very probably, and then if they had the balls to put on Dogtooth, then it's actually possible that they go for Beyond the Hills, New York. But so I think it's between that and but I do think Sister could appeal to their sensibilities. So
I don't think they'll go for Beyond the Hills. I think it's too much. I'm not sure they'll go for No either, because it's quite political and.
Well, they out like there. Political though. I mean, even when it's like glorifying terrorism, like the Bader-Meinhof complex.
Yeah,
and I think it's the fame. It's the having Gale. I think if it didn't have Gale, then it's always. Nowadays they do have those sort of like weirdish ones, like the Milk of Sorrow. I mean, what a great pick that was. So I think Sister might be that one.
Yeah. But, what do you think about Contiki? Because that's the Weinstein Company, isn't it?
So yeah.
That's going to get a campaign.
Yeah, it looks. I think if we didn't have it, this rigmarole of the New York chapter voting stuff on, I think it would be in. I think if it was just left to the normal people who vote and see all the films and have the time, then they'd go for it. But with it being this stripped down, they will go in a. Well, they didn't go for Volvet, so. And they did go for Dogtooth, so I think that takes it away from traditional bait.
True.
And they've got traditional bait in Into Shabla, so.
They're all serious films except for The Untouchables,
yes.
Which is, well, still serious in places, but.
Yeah, it's the crowd pleaser.
Yeah, which is why it's going to win.
I think it's got to be the favourite. I mean, it's 4-1 at the moment at the bookies.
What, second favourite?
Yeah, Amor's 7-1 on. I mean, that is just ridiculous. Because it's like last year. I mean, when A Separation was like 10-1 on. And you're like, well, it's actually quite conceivable that it doesn't win. I mean, okay, it might.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't even. It's actually a bit of a surprise when something like A Separation wins, because they don't go for the big critical darling a lot of the time, and that is Amor. So that's why I would think Amor isn't winning. But
yeah, What do you think about The Deep? I mean, that could sneak in because I've previously said I don't think that the committee put it in.
Right.
So like. That would imply that it's got fans.
And with Cormacore, I haven't seen it, but he makes interesting films visually. I mean, even something when he got to Hollywood and he did Contraband. Really gorgeous cinematography. I mean, even for like a Mark Wahlberg action film, he actually took the time. So he's a bit of an artiste in that respect. He does he does pay attention to the visuals, and so I think they will appreciate that. But then again, I mean, you look at something like Sister. I mean, that's impeccably made from a visual standpoint. I'm assuming Mungu looks like a piece of shit. Because it's Romanian.
It's pretty well, it's bleak, but it looks quite. It's sort of like a mall.
Okay.
You know, right. It's
stripped. It's like a sheened version of that style then.
Yeah.
Okay. But A Royal Affair looks lovely, from a visual standpoint as well.
It does, yeah. That, it's traditional, but it's sort of like, well, been there, done that.
Mm. But so with this, just to wrap it up, I kind of, when it comes to Best Picture, if something's like a 7 out of 10 for me, and it's getting nominated in Best Picture, I don't mind, because...
Like Silver Linings.
Yeah, like Silver Linings, because the taste is so different and they're really constrained from what they're actually seeing. So I give them a lot of leeway. With foreign language, the temptation is to not give them any leeway because ostensibly they all see all the films, all the votes. So my sort of like limit for this is, if I think it's a good nomination, is at least 8 out of 10. And
because
that,
they should be good.
Yeah, and there's no excuse for not having seen it. And of the ones I've seen that I'm at that sort of level with, it is War Witch, it is Into Charlotte, Barbara's not there.
Yeah.
And Sisters just are on that sort of like cusp.
In my mind, Amore, Untouchables and Sister would all be good nominations.
Right.
And yeah. A Royal Affair would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, also, it's in comparison with last year, which was just so awful. I mean, they did such a stunningly poor job with the nominees last year, in a bad year anyway. So it was compounded. There were so many films I gave like 5 out of 10 in that lineup. It was horrendous. Mm. But yeah, so I mean, for me, really, it is into Charlotte or War Witch. I'd probably want War Witch to win, but I'd be happy with Into Charlotte doing it because it is a good film. But I haven't seen all of them yet, so hopefully some of the others are decent. Or more than decent. Because otherwise, we'll just get annoyed.
So I really want to see No.
Do you think that we could have a situation like, say, 2003, where you could pick 5 films that were submitted and didn't get in that are better than the actual 5 that do?
Because yeah.
If you look at, like, 2003... the ones that got in were Barbarian Invasions, Zellery, which is a good film, Twilight Samurai, which is a very good film, then Twin Sisters and Evil, and then stuff that's on the outside, stuff like the Ceylon film, Distant, The Return from Zvi Ginsev, Story of the Weeping Camel, Spring, Summer, Autumn, Winter and Spring, Infernal Affairs, Goodbye Lenin, Bon Voyage, Reconstruction, there's so many.
Yeah.
I mean, what an embarrassment of riches that year was. But, I do think that might actually happen this year because there are some really good films that aren't there.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a really, really great year for this, or at least deep.
Mm. Yes.
Okay.
Right, so, Preconception Corner.
The films this week?
Yeah, we've got Jack Reacher, Pitch Perfect, Parental Guidance, and Life of Pi. So, which have been released either last Friday or on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
So, Preconceptions for Jack Reacher.
My mum... I went with my mum for this. Because she loves the books, so...
Oh, right, okay.
I just knew that they were quite a popular set of books.
So, she knew that in the books, Jack Reacher's 6'5" and, like, 15 stone.
Yes.
And they cast Tom Cruise.
Yes.
I knew nothing about the books. Christopher McQuarrie directing was really interesting for me because he wrote The Usual Suspects.
Right.
I like Cruise in general. Although I did see Mission Impossible 4 on Christmas Day, and good grief, the tone on that was all over the place.
I really like that.
I can kind of see why people were saying it should have been a Bond film because it does go for the comedy so much.
Yeah,
but it was just shockingly out of context with the rest of the series. Rosamund Pike. Wow. Anyway, Pitch Perfect. Preconceptions?
Don't particularly like Anna Kendrick.
Me either.
And it looked fun.
Yeah.
And it looked kind of a bit like Glee.
Yeah. This looked really... not great, and it was just looked like a bit of a chore. I mean, Kendrick's fine, but her chipmunky charm has never done it for me.
A chipmunky.
Parental Guidance, which I can't believe you didn't see.
Oh, yeah. I'm really sad about it, but I didn't have time.
Yeah. Well, your preconceptions.
Especially since it's Bette Midler.
Yeah, Bette Midler. Yeah. So my preconceptions were looks fine and. I really like Mr. Tomei and Billy Crystal's usually value doing comedy, so.
Yeah.
All right, Life of Pi. Had you read the book?
No.
No,
have you?
Neither. Like, I bought it for somebody who promptly didn't read it. But I was but I knew a little bit about the book, and so I was interested to see how they go with it from a visual standpoint.
Yeah.
And Ang Lee directing, I'm not madly in love with all of his films, but it's always a plus that he's directing. So, and I love the trailer. So.
Yeah, I like the trailer, and I really like Ang Lee. Mm. He can be off on occasion, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, all right. Mr. Reacher.
Yes.
All 6'5" of you.
Probably closer to 5'5", but.
Topical. Maybe that is lifts.
So, Cruz is Jack Reacher, a character created by author Lee Child. He's written like over a dozen novels about this character.
Right.
He's supposed to be a former army major with a reputation for being able to solve intricate cases. This one's based on the book One Shot, and it starts with five people getting gunned down by a sniper in the San Francisco area.
Pittsburgh
area. Mm. I was trying to think what baseball ground that
it's
was.
It's the Pirates.
that's
the only reason I know it's the Pirates.
Pittsburgh.
Yep.
The clues all point to one guy, but he won't confess. He just hands the police a note saying, "Get Jack Reacher." Jack Reacher turns up of his own accord and is eventually led to investigate what's going on. Mm-hmm. Rosamund Pike is the defense attorney for the guy arrested for murder, and she pretty much believes that he's done it, but she hires Jack Reacher as the her lead investigator anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Yeah. What do you think of the tone of this? Because sometimes it does go for rather, not broad, but definitely tries to go for snappy comedy.
Yeah, there's, well, apparently the book's like that as well.
Right.
There are a lot of one-liners. And I think that's kind of a plus for the film.
Mm.
Because otherwise it might get a bit bogged down.
Yeah.
Because it's quite samey all the way through. But you get like, you even get a joke like at the climax of the action, which was a bit much, I thought, but
yeah,
it's got a lack of like self-seriousness. It doesn't seem
definitely.
To.
I mean, especially with the scenes between Pike and Cruz, like when he's like there topless and she's like saying, after about three or four sentences, she's just like, "Would you mind putting on a shirt?"
Apparently they sleep together in the book.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, I was actually pleased they shy away from that in the film.
Mm. Although they do have a 2-second shot of this woman getting out of his bed.
Yes.
Near the beginning.
Purely there for the 15-year-old boys to look and go, "Ooh, ass, ass."
What do you think of the actual plot then?
The plot, I think, in terms of what was happening, as in why the five people were being gunned down, was really obvious really early. And I don't know why, yeah. I just that thought it just was.
It's not surprising, the revelation.
No. I picked it up when she was just running through the five people. She was describing the five people, and I thought, okay, yeah, that's it, yeah. And it's kind of, I'm not sure about the whole where you see the baddies' point of view. I'm not sure if it's good or not, or if it would have been served better if you actually genuinely didn't know that he was innocent, because you see the someone, not him, is pulling the trigger.
Yeah, it's a bit of a Columbo situation.
Yes.
Like, whenever I watched Columbo, I was like, I don't want to know who did it.
Yeah. But you always know, even if you miss the first 10 minutes for Columbo, you know who did it, because you know that he's, which witness he's is helping him to solve it is the actual killer. Every time. So I'm not too sure about that. I do get what you mean with the some of the things being a bit repetitive, how like going to borrow someone's car and then drive and beat up some people, and then borrow someone else's car and then drive and beat up some people.
Yeah, although it's quite refreshing that because he was supposed to be this kind of maverick who didn't use transport, etc., or phones, you didn't get all that product placement, which was good.
No. But then again, you've got this guy who's supposed to be Mr. Off the Grid, who's never been arrested and hasn't got any sort of like record whatsoever. And yet, how many times are the police around with this guy during the course of the film? I like the quiet scenes. There are just certain scenes where it just gets really, really, really quiet when the action's not happening. And I think that's really unusual that Macquarie actually gives it space to breathe. Even I'm not sure if it's necessarily even just a bit bring tension, but it's just to even if it's just to show a couple being at ease with each other, it's a little bit different. But
I like the thing between Rosamund Pike and Richard Jenkins as well. That you weren't sure what was going to happen there.
Yes.
Although I don't think that what eventually happens is great. Like, no. There's a villain that somebody turns out to be a villain, and I don't think that works, really.
But... no. And when you actually... it's really full of MacGuffins, this whole story. And it's Werner Herzog as, like, the uber baddie. And...
he's so creepy.
He is really creepy. But there's no real... it's a very superficial drawing of underpinning to what actually is going on and why. I mean, the why all this is happening is really unimportant.
The motive is not very good. No. And I don't really get his place in all of it.
No. No, it's really strange. I mean, because it's more about the sniper. And I can see why this did get delayed after the shootings in Connecticut, because I got a feel of that when I was watching it last night. It was just thinking, oh, good grief, are they doing that? Which, but I mean, sadly, it's always going to be there, especially in America. I mean, a year doesn't go by.
And it is effective, that first scene.
Yes. Yes. So the thing with this, I did actually enjoy it quite a lot. I'm not sure if it's because I'd seen Parental Guidance immediately before. More on that later. But I really did enjoy this. But even as I was walking down the steps, as the credits were rolling, I was thinking, if I give this too much thought, I mean, when it gets to the end, the underlying message, is so obnoxiously American, and I was just thinking that I that violence solves everything, and vigilantism, .. I mean, it's, in that respect, the message is rather repugnant. And I was thinking, but it was fun. It's just the conversation happens.
Yeah. I think if it had taken itself seriously, really seriously, it would have felt mediocre. Even more. I don't think it's a particularly good film, but it is silly. It is enjoyable.
Yeah.
And it's just a very middle of the road.
I think a lot of that is the cast. I mean, you're casting Richard Jenkins in like a throwaway role, but you know he's going to bring it. And Pike, she just elevates what she's given.
And, yes.
I always used to say of her, all she needs is that one role. And
I think she'll get it.
And she's had it. She got Women in Love, the TV version of the about 18 months ago. And of course, the problem with that is that Women in Love was a complete hack job, and she got undermined, and she couldn't do anything with it because of who was doing it. So hopefully there's a Greer Garson biopic in the pipe somewhere, which she would be perfect for.
Is there a resemblance there?
Yeah, with the cheekbones, I can see it.
Put a bit of rouge on her, maybe.
Make a bit of a redhead. Get her doing a Scottish accent and dancing in a kilt, in a miniskirt kilt in 1941. My God, they must have been howling in the aisles.
I always thought Meryl looked a bit like Greer back in the day.
Yeah, well, I think she her face was a bit thinner. Maybe it's got the wide angled cheekbones, even more. But no, I'd pay to see a Rosamund Pike in a Greer Garson biopic, please.
Yeah.
Especially when you're marrying the lad playing your son in Mrs. Miniver. I mean, that's just awesome. Hi, I'm playing your mom. Let's go to bed.
That's terrible.
Cougar Town.
Okay. Do you want to...
Ratings?
Yep. C+.
7 out of 10 for me.
Okay. All right.
Right. So Pitch Perfect was the other cinematic offering last week. And Pitch Perfect, for the uninitiated, is an American college film starring a load of people in their mid to late 20s, because that's what happens in American films when you've got people who have to be between 18 and 21 years old.
Yeah, because there aren't enough famous people.
No, or non-famous people. They'd rather have non-famous old people who are about 10 years inappropriate.
And that would be Anna Kendrick in this case.
Well, apparently the main girl who's like in charge of it all, we'll get to the plot in a second, is almost 30.
Yeah, she's been in The Good Wife.
God. Yeah. So this is basically about a girl who's a wannabe DJ who goes to college begrudgingly because her daddy won't pay for her to go to LA and become a DJ. So she goes to college and she wants to quit. Her dad works at the same university, and he implores her that she has to join at least one club in order to be social, because you have to be social at college, otherwise you're not going to be social at college. And so she joins an a cappella or girl group, as you do, because there's four of them on campus, as I'm sure there all are. And they have to, their one goal for the year is to get back to the national finals, where, strangely enough, two different groups from the same one university got the previous year. Whatever. So that's basically, and so that's what it's about. She turns up, and it's about the group's exploits and her blossoming amidst said noisemaking.
Yeah. I want to say that the gross-out elements let it down a lot.
Yeah.
It starts off with projectile vomiting.
Yes. And there's some more of it in the middle.
Yeah. And it's like, there's not even a need for it. Like, why can't she just hit the worst note ever?
Because Bridesmaids came out. Quite frankly.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, well... popular, although I think it lets that film down too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't work with this, and it just kind of, it doesn't feel in keeping with the rest either.
No, because it's actually quite funny, quite consistently for a lot of it, and this is a film where you are laughing all the way through, well, up to a certain point. And sniggering and thinking, I can't believe it. Did they really just say that? I mean, the times when... doesn't she actually say totes at one point?
Yeah.
I was thinking Miley Cyrus is back on the podcast. We can't get rid of her.
But they've got like little sayings like, Acker, amazing, and...
Acker, excuse me. Just silly little stuff. I mean, it's silly, a silly little comedy, and that really works. I'm less sold on the sort of romantic subplots.
I liked him.
He's nice. He's got a nice presence. He's quite charming, but he's almost too charming because with that he's like the romantic interest. They both work at the same radio station, stacking CDs. And so when they first meet, he's being really charming just trying to be crack onto her. And she's just completely blanking him, not even, and just thinking, well, why would you even bother if you're him? If she's that aloof, why would you care? She's not that fit.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's not like Glee at the beginning. It's sort of like an anti-Glee where it's all about the talent. Like, she's a DJ. And it's not so much about her issues.
Yeah, it's the...
But then, when you get towards the end, and they have the little meeting.
Yeah.
Like, the little heart-to-heart in the group. And it just gets a bit too smaltzy at the end.
Everything from there, that's why I said up to a certain point, because for like an hour or so, first couple of acts, this is good. It's a good film. It's a good film, especially for the type of film that it is, but it's good anyway. It's something I would recommend in the way that I recommend
Bridesmaids.
Stuff like Enchanted or Bridesmaids, yeah. But then the last third is just, it's so poor. In every single imaginable way, dramatically, it's really unsatisfying. And they've been going on the whole time about how films are really predictable, in the conversations with the characters. They've been going on about how films are predictable, but the end's the best bit. And with this, it's predictable, and the end's the worst bit.
Yeah.
And it really just doesn't follow through at all.
And the problem for me is the message that it sends. It's been going on about her DJing and her sending mixtapes in and all that and wanting to go to LA. Mm. And then it sort of like completely demeans that, as if she should settle for...
doing a bastardised version of it as long as you've got some mates.
Yeah. Which is a terrible message to send a young person with talent.
Give up on your dreams.
Yeah.
It ain't worth it.
I just thought that was a really sour note to end on.
But then again, that is talent in inverted commas. Because, I mean, yeah, I can rip off, I can leech off other people's creativity. People have actually written these songs. Yeah, I'll take this little bit from there, this little bit from there. Aren't I clever? No. Don't get me, this is my music snobbery kicking in. Dear.
What do you think about Rebel Wilson?
Good to begin with, but then becomes almost like a parody of it towards the end. Less, but for a good 45 minutes, she's the best in show.
Yeah.
It's just
I liked the redhead as well.
Yeah, the number two. I mean, the shower scene is completely ridiculous.
but it's
funny. Because it's ridiculous. So you're not. You're kind of laughing at it, but you are laughing with it because it does know what it's doing. It does know that what it's doing is ridiculous. Yeah.
And they sing LaRue as well, which I like.
Well, this is the thing I didn't recognise most of the music in this film because I don't listen to I listen to the radio, but I only listen to Radio 5. When I'm in the car, I'm driving, I listen to CDs. That's how old school I am. No iPods for this show. But I listen to music of my choice when I'm in the... when I'm in the car, so I only listen to the radio if I'm listening to, like, Radio 5. So I'm completely out of the loop when it comes to pop music, so I didn't recognise a lot of these films. But when I did recognise the music, it just completely undermined the characterisation, because Anna Kendrick's there, and the first thing she does is that she complains that they don't sing, that the group doesn't sing anything from this century. Yet whenever she has to contribute anything, she just riffs on old school stuff. It's like, we're having a riff off. Okay, I'm going to sing No Diggity, which is like from the mid-90s. And then at the end, we're going to chuck a Simple Minds, she's going to riff a Simple Minds tune in. I thought you were complaining that they were singing old songs,
exactly.
Woman.
And she's seems utterly shocked that somebody knows and has heard of David Guetta. When David Guetta, is in the top 40 every week.
Yeah.
So, it just seemed a little, I don't know, just like it'd been written by somebody who wasn't that clued up about music.
It also felt, I mean, apparently the screenplay is written by a woman based on a novel. I mean, how is this a novel? Based on a novel by a bloke. And I if I was guessing... That whole storyline about how the lad tells the girl to watch his favourite films, which of course all American and extremely commercial, and then she that's what helps her fall in love with him by watching his films. It's like, please don't insult my intelligence.
And apparently, I've just checked. Apparently, the woman who wrote the screenplay has written a lot of 30 Rock episodes.
I bet then I can believe that because of the how silly the first hour is. And I think she's probably just chained by the source material where she's got to go with it.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me. But it's just... I don't buy the whole... it's too quick with her and him. And at one point she turns up at his door and he does the absolutely brilliant thing. He says, look, if you're not interested, then sod off.
Yeah.
I was almost on my feet applauding. but then, of course... One gesture and then that's it. Bang.
So what do you think about Anna Kendrick? Because neither of us like her particularly.
She's fine. She's
yeah.
Okay, she's perfectly serviceable. because she's got to kind of be the straight person like Martin Freeman was in The Hobbit, who's looking on at the ridiculousness of what's surrounding her. But I don't think she has an especially warm presence.
No.
And I think that would have smoothed out some of the problems of the character, especially with the lad, because she's got to be kind of like just pushing him off the whole time, and then tie it up in a bow.
She's quite obvious at times as well, like she's quite snarly.
I think someone like Amanda Seyfried would, if you're going for that old, not that Seyfried's old, but in terms of like a college girl, she's old. She would have a nicer presence. But, I mean, really, ideally, for the age...
What about Thirlby?
Or Thirlby, yeah. For the age, I would have loved to have seen Lizzie Olsen in it, just to see her try and do some comedy as well.
Yeah.
And, but then again, I suppose if it's... it's more towards the sort of things her sisters would have done. So she probably doesn't want to go there, and she is, like, apparently a serious actress, but... it would have been interesting to see someone like her, because she's the right age for it as well.
Yeah.
But and just see if she could break loose a bit. But no, Kendrick was okay, but I mean, not really a plus or minus for me.
Yeah. It's mainly the end that really lets it down.
Yeah, big time. And it's not because it's predictable, it's just because of how it's done, and it's not satisfactory with how you've set everything up.
Yeah. Okay, C plus again for me.
Yeah, 6, because it would have been at least a 7 if you stopped it at that scene where they had the meeting. I would have given it a 7, but it drags it down after that.
Yeah. Okay, so you saw this after
before The Art of the Double Bill, and I got The Art of the Double Bill on this one. Parental Guidance first, and then Jack Reacher. Yes. Parental Guidance is the story of a couple of grandparents, Billy Crystal and Bette Midler. Hey. Nice to see both of them in something, quite frankly. Billy Crystal's a announcer for the local minor league baseball team. and his dream is to be the announcer for the San Francisco Giants. At the end of the season, he's let go by the boss who wants to completely rebrand everything, get rid of the team name, everything. Just wants rid. So he cuts him loose, and then while this has happened, his daughter Marissa Tomei, who they're kind of estranged from, they haven't seen the grandkids for a year. Marissa Tomei and her husband are scrambling around. For someone to look after their kids so that they can have a week's holiday, their first in 5 years. So eventually the husband persuades Tomei, who has a very frosty relationship with her parents, to call them and get them to come and visit the grandkids. And shenanigans ensue.
Oh dear. Nappies, etc.? Or just general chaos?
They're a bit older than nappies. Basically, in this sort of film, you've got to have arcs, so each little kid has their own little arc. So the eldest daughter is trying to get into a school for the musically gifted. The middle boy has got a speech stutter and is getting bullied. And then the youngest one is just generally a little git who has got an imaginary friend who's a kangaroo. So obviously this is like Voltaire-like literary stuff.
Dear.
But it's saved by the charms of the cast. It is well cast. I mean, Crystal, he's not great in this, but he's Billy Crystal. And as long as he's Billy Crystal, he's fine. Bette Midler got the bulk of the affection of the audience that I watched this with. she's basically the she wants her grandkids to love her, and even if they hate Crystal, she doesn't care. She just wants them to like her. So she's got the sort of like madcap zany kind of role. And then Tomei's just the overbearing mother who won't actually let the grandparents look after her kids. She doesn't actually go on holiday for a long period of the film. So it all unfolds without a shred of unpredictability, and some of it is mildly amusing, and some of it's mildly embarrassing in equal measure. And just some of the stuff is just really trite and overdone, like the kid with a stutter, granddad's a baseball announcer, so you have the Bobby Thompson hit heard around the world thing, which he listens to on his iPod, guess where that goes? All this sort of stuff. But then again, sometimes it is it's like quite funny when like Bette Midler's gone shopping with Tomei, and she's like trying to buy a cocktail dress for a 12-year-old granddaughter to go to a party. it is quite fun, and it's all about how Tomei and her husband are just ridiculous. They won't say no to the kids. They're raising them overly protectively, and so it does make some good points and get some humour out of that. But sometimes it is just a bit too silly, like Crystal, because he's sacked. He goes and tries to go on an audition for the X Games, and so he turns up with like a Kangol hat on backwards and doesn't know who Tony Hawk is, and all this sort of stuff.
So it's all kind of generational jokes.
It's okay. It's the sort of film, because it was out on Boxing Day, it's the sort of film that when the Christmas holidays are on, you just have on at like 3 o'clock, and your 5 and 6 year olds would probably like laugh along with it, and you just have it on.
Yeah.
Just to shut them up for an hour and a half. It's perfectly watchable, but there's nothing that would make me want to, apart from Marissa Tomei, that would make me want to watch this again. Because that woman is almost 50, and she looks great.
Yeah, she really does.
And she's just one of these Julianne Moores who looks better in her 40s than she did in her 20s. She's done a deal with the devil.
But she's got a great presence about her.
Yeah, and she's someone who does have a very nice presence. And it works for this role. Unlike something like Enchanted, which is a kids' film that I would say to adults, yeah, you'll really enjoy this. I don't think I could really say that about this.
It's just too infantile.
With the humour, yeah, some of it, and it just doesn't do anything subversive or interesting with the material.
Does Midler sing?
Yes, she has a duet with Crystal.
Yes, what duet?
And it's like it's a dance. I don't know the song. It's called The Book of Love, but it's not that The Book of Love, because the thing is she sees Tomei's playlist, and she confuses that she thinks that that's the top of her playlist. It's like some silly kid song. I think it sounds like a show tune actually that her and Crystal are singing.
This sounds like it's worth it then.
Midler sings and buys cocktail dresses for 12-year-olds. It's a must.
Oh, what's your grade then?
5, being kind, because it is an average film, and for everything that's a bit off about it, there's something that is mildly amusing about it. There's a very good scene where Crystal turns up at his kid's baseball game softball game. And they don't actually have an out. And his grandson strikes him out, and he says, "Sorry, no, we just carry on playing until they hit." And then he just starts getting in the umpire's face, and all the parents are like, "Yeah, this is boring as hell." But yeah,
it seems like this one's got a bit of a critical pounding, to be honest. But
I can see why. I mean, as I said, I'm being kind by giving it 5 out of 10, because I'm just that kind of nice guy, and it is tis the season.
Seems like there's always one of these films that come out every year.
Yeah.
Around this time. Okay. Great. So, film of the week?
Film of the week. The 3D-less film of the week.
Yeah, we both decided to watch Life of Pi in 2D.
Yes.
And which I am happy about that decision.
Yes.
So, Life of Pi is a film about a young boy from India. His father owns a zoo. Eventually, they have to sell the zoo. And they have to transport the animals across to England, I think.
Yeah.
And when they're on the ship, there's a huge storm. And the boy gets swept away on a lifeboat, along with some of the animals who are in the cargo hold. There's a tiger, a
hyena,
an orangutan. Is it a giraffe?
Zebra, and because, sorry, we do have some American listeners.
Zebra. And so they get swept away, and it's about him being lost at sea.
Mm-hmm.
And this story's being told from the modern-day America by Irfan Khan's character, who's Pi, as an older guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's telling that to a journalist who wants to tell his story.
Yeah, Rafe Spall with an accent that I thought, we're no experts, but that sounded pretty flawless to me. I mean, it didn't sound off at all.
Oh, Rafe Spall is in Shakespeare, in Anonymous.
Mm.
Wow.
I know.
He scrubs up well. okay, do you want to start with the visuals?
Yes, I do, actually. Because this is... Everyone's going mad for the tiger.
Yeah.
With good reason. The tiger is incredible.
Yeah.
But some of the special effects in this are absolutely woeful. Like with the uncle with the shoulders and the legs. It just looks so fake.
Which uncle?
You know, at the beginning, when he's like the one who gave him his name.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And it doesn't even look real. So, and I know that it's like a flashback telling like from a child's point of view, but still, in general, the visuals, there are just things that I have issues with. One of which was the shifting of aspect ratios, which I'm not sure. Maybe if I were watching it in 3D, I would have just been so amazed by the wonderfulness of it all that I wouldn't have actually noticed that the side of the frame is coming in and then that going back out and then coming in and going back out again.
Yeah.
But then the cinematography, sometimes it's absolutely gorgeous, but then it kind of reminded me, the middle section when they're on the boat, reminded me of what you said about the Les Miserables trailer. It's just like 80% crane shots.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if, and this is a good thing, usually it's a criticism, but it's almost as if Ang Lee realises what an inherent lack of content there is. And so he's,
absolutely.
So he decides,
yes,
he wants to make up for it by just doing as much as he can to make it interesting visually.
Yeah, and it is very interesting. I think when they're at sea, it is at its most interesting and
captivating. Because they ditched the voiceover.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe they kept the voiceover for that long. And if they're going to keep it for that long, because it's 45 minutes before the thing sinks.
It's too long. The beginning is too long.
And also it's too long because it doesn't give the required underpinning to make where they go with it emotional, because I didn't find it that emotional with where they go with it. And I was thinking,
what, with the tiger?
No, I just mean in general at the end when they're trying to push everything into like emotional direction. I'm thinking, yeah, well, I've seen 45 minutes of what happened before, and I don't really care that much. I mean, maybe it's the Ang Lee-ness of it all.
I think he tried to make it too serious. Like, the framing device, it was overcomplicated to me.
And the way that he flicks in and out of it is really draws attention to him as a director. It's like, it's not like someone who's doing a stylish thing because that's the storytelling. It's almost like, I know that how lame this is, so I'm just going to do something quirky.
Yeah. And I just think it works best as a basic fairy tale.
Yes.
without all of this
smoking. I came back and the words I used to describe it, I said it's lights. It's like a fact. It's like Tim Robey's great line about Anna Karenina. It's a Fabergé egg, and it's all lights and sparkle.
And yeah,
that's what this film is.
Well, it has very basic messages that I think are fine,
yes,
for a fairy tale audience,
and extraordinarily pretentious when you consider that I've got a story that will make you believe in God. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And then when the reveals come, which get to that point, it just makes you think, okay, fine, but then that doesn't necessarily... I can get on board with that twist, that's okay, but then that doesn't explain this. And then that just...
Do you mean the alternative?
Yeah, yeah.
Not
the alternative, the actual... what's going on with the tiger? So, okay, fine, I can get what you're doing with that. But then that doesn't explain this, and then by therefore, it just makes that a bit more muddy if I think about it. So I don't think it's a clean allegory, and I think there's a lot of problems that stem from the writing. And it doesn't make me want to go and read the book to find out if that was in the book or not.
Yeah.
But it's... what about the lad? What do you think about the lad?
I thought he was great, actually. Kind of... It's very... It's sort of like a very expressive performance. It's not particularly deep.
No.
It kind of serves the purpose of the peril of everything.
Mm. I think facially, I do think he was great. I think he was really spot on. But I think his voice let him down a bit with some of the deliveries.
You think?
And, yeah, for me, anyway. But, yeah, I think in general he was good. Because he is the film, really.
Yeah, he is. He carries the film, which... Well, him and Ang Lee, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's like, I kind of did get a connection with him and the tiger. I think I'm kind of conceived to kind of be warmed by the human-animal bond thing.
Right.
But, when he's like, we're dying or something, and the tiger's just like wrecked, and I was just like, oh my god. I did cry, but I don't know, I think it's very, very arresting for a long time.
It has its moments.
I just think the beginning and the end, there's problems.
Yeah.
The whole middle section, I think, is an absolutely great, great fairy tale story with simple messages, but still fine for a young audience.
I think I think that is part of the structure, the whole, from the book, apparently, that you've got him telling the story. Or maybe they've added to it, I don't know, but it's just...
It's like you get films like The Black Stallion, you get films like The Princess Bride, where they show like a guy
reading
telling
a kid
a fairy tale.
Yeah.
And it's
in the book, the investigators from the end, that's who he's telling the story to, apparently.
Which I didn't like. I didn't like the alternative story because it sort of demeans everything that's gone before it a little bit.
And also, I think with what they go with in terms of the tiger, I think there are other ways you could have gone that would have been more interesting. So it's just... It's one of these ones where the more you think about it, the more it doesn't really hold up to it. But it is, to quote David Strathairn in Good Night and Good Luck, it may very well end up being just lights in a box. That's what this film is. But they're very pretty lights.
It's really well made, I think.
I mean, this is the thing. I mean, this is a director's film.
Yeah.
And it's...
I mean, do you think he's going to get nominated?
Well, they don't usually like director's films like that. But I think he will, because it's him.
Yeah, me too.
And I think the directors will know what a job he's had to do, because they'll know how little verbally is going on and how little...
It's a bit of a Hugo situation.
Yes.
Although I think it's better than Hugo, but it's just got, like... It is his touch all the way through. and it could easily get boring fast. And I think it keeps little stylistic flourishes that keep it going and keep you wanting to find out what's going to happen.
Because if there is a one theme that sort of goes all the way through Ang Lee's work, then it is isolation. You think of obviously Brokeback, the ice storm with the kids and what have you, the Hulk. You can see why he's drawn to the Hulk.
Yeah, that's true.
Sense and Sensibility. You get it. You do. So I think he was the perfect person for that middle section, because it is all about the isolation. But
I think if you put this in Spielberg's hands, I think it would have been considerably worse.
The end would be worse because it would
be worse. Because you'd probably get the family coming back at the end. It would be like a big reunion. It could easily have been more sentimental than it was.
Yes.
With the tiger too. Mm. But
you certainly have. I mean, Michael Danner's score is very understated.
I like that, yeah.
I love Michael Danner, and he might actually be my favourite composer working today because he's so versatile. Because he can do like a fully Indian score for something like Monsoon Wedding. Then you've got The Sweet Hereafter, which makes use of early music. He can do your normal sort of stripped down brooding strings with Capote. He's a very versatile, first-rate film scorer. And with this, it did kind of feel like it was kind of a derivative for him. Because there's a lot of ice stormish type of instrumentation. But if you'd have had Steven Spielberg, you'd have John Williams overscoring the hell out of it and trying to milk everything. And that's why it would be bad. So in a way, it kind of, you don't reach the emotional potential with having Ang Lee and Michael Danner doing it, but you don't overcook it as a result. And you don't want it to be overcooked, especially this sort of story. Because you just come
out. I feel like.
Because you dismiss it.
Yeah, I feel like the technical elements collectively serve the film well. And in a way that I think Hugo is smoke and mirrors, I don't think this is quite that.
No.
I think it's more in keeping with the story, and it's got a handle on what's going on, and it says very simple things, but it says them effectively.
Mm. And final word, like to do with like the 2D, 3D. There are scenes when you watch this and you know are purely designed just to be in 3D. Like there's a scene like a fish comes out of the middle.
Yeah.
And obviously the tiger coming out from under the tarpaulin for the first time. And you're thinking, well, everyone's been going on about 3D and how it uses it the best. But I mean, that's the same sort of thing when you watch it in 2D and know that that shot is there for the 3D. Mm-hmm. That's not actually what it is. You should watch the 2D version and not notice it.
Obviously, you've got the stuff like the sparkles, the reflections in the sea, and all the
algae meerkats. And everything. Yeah.
And it looks great anyway, so I don't really think it needs to be in 3D.
No. Whatever. No. So, grade for this one?
I'm between B and B minus. I think I'm going to go with B minus.
Right.
But that could change.
Yeah, I'm 6 out of 10. It's there's too many intellectual problems for me to say this was a very good film, or quite a good film. But it's Ang Lee elevates it enough. It's very, very decent.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm.
Are we going to do Shag, Marry, Kill?
Yes, we will. Yes, we will.
I've just thought
we can do a random top three off the top of our head. Top three elevations of direction.
Okay. Well, have you got any ideas, like?
No, I've literally just thought that was my idea, which I just had about 10 seconds ago. So, directed.
Well, we can take our time and I can edit it out.
I've got one straight away. James Cameron, Titanic. That is.
Oh, this is controversial.
That isn't. Well, no, because the material is an absolute piece of crap. The screenplay is awful. But he absolutely does the absolute best that he can with it.
Yeah, I really love Titanic, but I think it is really perfectly shot.
Mm.
From one, there's just so many iconic images in it.
I'll give you.
And he holds everything. He holds the story together so well, like around all of this mess.
Right. I'm going to continue the theme and say films I know you like. Michael Winterbottom, A Mighty Heart. That is the things that he does there as a director, where he's like with the shots, where he's like doing shots through windows. And
I think the editing's awesome too.
Yes, and so he's doing things because it is just people in rooms talking.
Yeah,
but he's making it interesting visually, and then with his the way that he directs it, literally, really elevates what's there. Because anybody else, when you've got that story and Angelina Jolie, and it comes to the big, what ends up happening, he takes the camera out of the room. Anyone. 9 directors out of 10 would shove the camera right in the face and say, go get your Oscar love. He takes it out of the room because he doesn't want her performance to outweigh the actual story. And, Winterbottom did a... If I was giving an award... If you gave the award for who did the most with the least that year, Winterbottom is it.
But that's an example of him really making the film... good though.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Oh no. Yeah. I think it's a decent film. I do.
Yeah. It's like very docudrama.
Yes.
So it's got a lot of impact because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of examples here.
Just brilliant direction that's outstrips everything else. Maybe something French New Wave. I'm thinking for you, shipping.
Le Chinois. I don't know.
Oh,
you think
Patrice LeConte, the girl on the bridge?
Okay.
Because that is. I mean, that's a good screenplay. Cause it is funny.
But the end isn't good, though, is
no,
it?
No. Some people will stop it after about an hour and 7 minutes.
Yeah.
But that is all style. That film, absolutely all style. Vanessa Paradis, Daniel Auteuil probably is. It's never been funnier. Oh dear. Hey, Bergman, Persona. That's a director's piece.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's a great actor's piece, though, too.
Mm. Food for thought, at the very least. Maybe you can chip in next week.
What about Where the Wild Things Are?
Okay.
Because that's, it's sort of a similar feel.
I'm just glad
film.
You didn't say Beast of the Southern Wild.
Oh. No, I'll save that for the top 10 week.
Oh, take the knife out of my heart. Right, Shag, Marry, Kill?
Yeah. Shag, it's Watch Every Day for the Rest of Your Life?
Shag's Watch Right Now.
Watch Right Now.
Yeah.
It would be Pitch Perfect.
Yes. Me too.
I'd have to marry Life of Pi.
Yeah, every weekend for the rest of your life. I'd marry Jack Reacher. Or more
really?
or more pointedly, Rosamund Pike.
Yes.
Well, if I had to watch it every weekend for the rest of my life, I'd watch Reacher. I wouldn't watch Pike.
Okay. And I would kill, I guess, Jack Reacher, because I haven't got any
other
choice.
Yeah, you're on the pure three. It's always hard on the pure three. I'd kill Parental Guidance, just because I could. And
that's an easy one for you, isn't it? I didn't dislike anything this week, actually.
I didn't really, either. It's all the sort of like 5 to 7 out of 10 range, which is what most films are.
True.
Mm. What's some factor?
Yes.
Well, tough week. It's at
I
least,
think we've established
it's,
two
it's,
people.
It's a hard three at the top. Pitch Perfect. No, Anna Kendrick's Monkey Charms don't do it for me. I'll stay at three, behind Pike and Marissa. Poupard Range.
I like the guy out of Jack Reacher, the bad guy.
Yeah, not Cruise. Yeah.
Is it Jay Courtney?
Oh yeah, the guy with the short hair, yeah.
Yeah.
Another one.
And also the.
The lad in Pitch Perfect?
Yeah.
Yeah. So a 3.0 on the range?
Yeah, on the range.
Good. Okay.
We have a blog. It's moveforpodcast.blogspot.com. We have a Twitter at moveforpodcast. We're on Gmail, moveforpodcast@gmail.com. Email questions.
Mm-hmm.
Feedburner, Stitcher, Facebook.
Yep, that's pretty much it. Our various blogs as well. And
what are we doing next week?
Next week, on New Year's Day, this is just pure off the top of my head, it's the impossible playing for keeps in a Watson-a-thon.
What?
Have you seen the cast of that film? It's like Zeta Jones, Beale, Uma Thurman, so Watson's got some competition at the very least. We're going to have to check out the say-do clause on that one.
Yeah.
There's one other, there's something else. Midnight's Children is still out. And
I can see that, can you?
Yes.
You might do that then.
Yes.
There's also Quartet.
That's it, yeah. No, I don't think there's anything to trouble Mr. Watson there.
Unless you're a fan of Sheridan Smith.
What have I seen her in? I've seen her in something which is quite good. But I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. Anyway.
We're just going to talk about the new Terrence Malick film trailer next week as well.
That is trailer.
Yeah. and do our Oscar predictions, because they're right on the 10th,
okay.
I think.
Okay. And now this is where I scramble around trying to find a way to segue into getting Cal to play some Phoenix for us to leave on. So maybe I just don't even do it and just make a request.
Okay.
Because this is actually brilliant. I ordered the album yesterday afternoon, and it came this morning.
Wow.
That is Amazon. Good job, lads.
You do know that Sofia Coppola's married to the lead guy.
Really?
Phoenix. Yes.
Doesn't surprise me at all. I know that Roman directed some of their videos when he would say, so is that how she met him? I'd guess.
I think he did.
Or the other way around.
Something for the soundtrack of Marie Antoinette, maybe?
Apparently she used some tunes for Somewhere.
Yeah,
some of the instrumental ones, but not the actual songs on the album. So
yeah, that'll be it then.
Mm.
So, but Spike Jonze and him. Pretty good going.
Step up from Tarantino. That's
true. She's like the Martina Hingis of the film.
The Village Bicycle. Everyone.
But she's working with Emma Watson as well, so. It's a plus.
Be kind, Sophia, be kind.
Who's the boy you like the most? Is it teasing you with underage? Could he be waving from a tropical sunset? Static silhouette somehow. Single in his bed someday. Quiet till it